Is it rolling, Bob?
A few paradoxes here, however. There's really this paradox of knowledge acquisition that cuts against this thesis of honoring expertise, because the advancement of our knowledge really is the result of distrusting and defying received opinions. You have scientists who find that there's something wrong with the consensus on any given topic, and they begin to defy it, and you need to have the tools of your discipline in order to do that. But it is just a fact that the growth of knowledge is a process where experts are continually unhorsed by a new generation of experts.
And that's key. That's a key thing that I think lay people don't understand. They say, well, you know, experts have to be challenged all the time because they get things wrong. Yes, they do have to be challenged, but by other experts who understand that field and who understand the rules of evidence in that field and who understand what's already been accomplished in that field. You know, an example that people often bring up when I talk about this, they say, well, you know, doctors, what do they know? They got it wrong about eggs. And I talk about this in the book because I happen to love eggs. But, you know, who figured out that eggs aren't so bad for you? Well, other doctors did, by peer reviewing and testing the assertions of an earlier generation of medical specialists. It wasn't, you know, the guy next to you in the diner who says, you know, I ate eggs all my life and I feel great. And I think that's where people make that mistake.
Another variable here is that there's the specialization. It's just too much to know. It's just impossible to know everything about everything, or really
you got it right.
Anything about everything.
And yeah. Thank you, Sam Harris and company. But now you got me. I got to shut the engine off here. Yeah, let's give it an official beginning. Thank you. Thompson Park. And you heard the bell. Put two and two together. And yes, I'm in the road trek. It was bugging me. Well, it was bugging me every time I turned it on. And this gas was sort of below the empty circle. The needle was just like it couldn't go any lower. And I was just afraid one day I was going to start it up and it was just going to die. And I'd have to try and get a gas can and get gas. And And the other part is sometimes when it's just sitting in the driveway, I get a little nervous. Wow, I'm going to drive that thing? And I knew it was just time to get it out of the house. I'm not going anywhere. I mean, I drove to the corner Petro-Can station and put in exactly to the penny, $75 worth, which is about 62 liters. And it measures 3/4 full, which is nice. I like the symmetry of all that. And so I feel much better. And well, I got back onto Lawrence where the gas station is and said, I'll just drive along to, Thompson Park. I did not risk the hill at, I'll take the call. Hi, Brian. No, I'm in my van, but I'm not driving. Oh, hello. Oh, damn it. Did I screw it up? Hey, Brian? No. Call him right back. Oops. Oh, I hung up again. Jesus. I shouldn't have one of these things.
Hello?
Yeah, Brian.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no problem.
I had a speaker, and I thought I could get you talking through the speaker, and I just screwed it up.
No. Okay.
The technology. Okay. Yeah. Even I have trouble with technology.
Yeah, so.
You're sounding great.
Yeah, so I'm at Cecilia's now.
Yeah. Maureen posted a picture of you with all your crosswords and stuff. Did Cecilia take the picture?
No, that was Sam and Liam.
Oh, okay.
Picture, I think, yeah.
Oh, good.
Because they took a few silly ones of me.
Yeah.
Typical, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, so they came to visit that Cecilia was there, and then we played a game of Chinese checkers, lounge area, and had a coffee and things. But you know what? The surgery went well. I've got four little punctures in my skin.
Yes.
There's not much pain. I'm off tranquilizer or off Tylenol.
Wow.
And,
amazing recovery.
Yeah, and it was very, very good. And then we ran into, when I was with Sam and Liam and Cecilia, we ran into him, our doctor, Dr. Brar.
Yeah.
And we were chatting with him for about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And talking about music and about things. And he has a brother who is in the same, you know, he does a little different type of surgery, but they both do surgeries there.
Right.
And they have the same secretary.
Okay.
And quite amazing, either, to think of that. Yeah.
Right. You've only got one doctor in your family.
Yes. Yeah. And he's not a surgeon.
No.
But, you know, he was very friendly, very nice. Everybody was terrific, you know. It was a very good experience.
Did he take something out of you? Like, did they remove something from your, was it in your intestine? Or?
I didn't realize it, but he took out probably, he said he probably took out about 8 or 9 inches or so of my colon. And just at where the colon meets the small intestine, is it?
Yeah.
And so he cut that out, and he said there was some of the tumor was mastocyzed or whatever. So he took all that out because that's all he could see.
Yeah,
but I'm amazed at to be able to do this.
I cannot even imagine it. And they put it back together and it still works. You know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, and I feel fine. Just getting up and sitting down. That's the only thing.
You need to take it easy for a while. I know it's hard for you, but you got to rest.
Yeah.
Your body is telling you.
Yeah, and Maureen sent me a text saying, "Brian, make sure you rest." So I said, "I'm just going to stay at Cecilia's for a few days, till say Monday." Anyway.
Yeah. Listen, Brian, I should tell you, I'm recording a podcast now, so you're on it. You're on the speakerphone. I hope that's okay.
Really? And
if not, I can delete it. But
No, it's all right.
Some people want to know.
You know what's funny is because the poor guy I was in the same room with, he's got complications and all that. He's not going to get out till next week. And then you see some of the other people are wheeling around and things. And I'm saying, wow, here I was up and walking around not that many hours after surgery.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Well, this speaks well. You've kept yourself healthy, all your walking and everything else. And it's good.
And I was able to get on to solid foods first thing yesterday morning. Oh, the only thing is, I'm just waiting for a good crap.
Yes.
So, it's a wonderful relief to be able to fart so you don't get the gas out.
Yeah, and go all the way through the pipe system and everything else. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So
you just sit there. I was talking to a friend, Bob Rose, and I was just sitting in bed, and I said, excuse me, and then I just... very good feeling. He said, go ahead. Great. Sounds great.
That's healthy.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, good for you.
The feeling of that is great.
Yeah.
So
you can do one live on the podcast if you like, but that was a pretty good imitation anyway.
Oh, yeah. So I read a whole book. I'm halfway through another book, and I was reading short stories in another book, and I did puzzles, and I read the newspaper, and, the Globe and that, so I didn't waste my time there.
You made a little holiday out of it from the sounds of it.
Well, it almost seemed, that's what I was telling the nursing staff, because they were excellent, when they were bringing around the food and various things, I said, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
I just lie around, and I get all this service, and, they're ready to they give me a massage on my stomach and the whole works. Yeah, so.
Well, one more thing to be grateful for about being Canadian, right, and having this healthcare system where you don't even have to worry about it.
No, I put down that I wanted to be in because I didn't want extra charges on my the card or whatever, the insurance. And so I just said, put me in a room with four, and that's covered by OHIP, except they didn't have any. They were so busy, they put me into a room with two, but there was no charge.
Yeah.
And so when I was leaving the hospital, zero,
Yeah.
They just said, don't do this. Don't exercise. Don't carry anything. Take your time.
Right.
Eat whatever you want. Bang, bang, bang. And there you are. So it's great. It's absolutely terrific. And the doctor. doctor, he was saying to one of the nurses, saying, "Oh, it'd be nice to have more parents or more patients like Brian."
No, I'm sure you'd be hit with
that. I just sort of go and chat away and all that sort of thing. So.
Well, I've been keeping people up to date, Mike and Bruce, and Naoko was asking and so on. Good to hear, and I posted, I look forward to when you're finally back up and fully recovered, buying you your first beer at the Only Cafe, so.
Yeah, that hopefully, now I guess.
Give yourself time.
Weekend.
Well.
Yeah, weekend, I guess, yeah.
Maybe next weekend or so.
Yeah.
Give yourself time, you know.
Yeah, it's not all that far from Christmas now, Mike.
No, I know, I know. Well, it's good to get this out of the way. Now, metastasized means it had become a cancer or it had just stopped. I don't know what that means.
I think it just means it became sort of solid-y or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or dead, I don't know. But they're doing, when you examine that and find out whether it was malignant or benign
yes.
or whatever.
Yes, yes. Yeah. They're doing their tests. And then they'll come back and tell you.
Yeah, then they'll tell me about that, yeah.
Right.
So I don't, like, with this, I just got little intrusions. So I've got four little things on my stomach.
Yeah.
And
that's the other wonderful thing.
You know, they took off the little covering, and then they said, the covering now will dissolve, the stitches underneath are fine, and they'll take care of themselves. And he said, just all sort of disappears, and that's it.
I don't know how they'd make little holes, and they can get rid of part of your intestine, though. How they pull it through a hole, or through your anus, or what? Like,
no, because people were saying, well, did they go through your rectum and that? I said, no, right through my tummy button with the camera.
Yeah, this is just, it's amazing.
I'm sure glad they're doing it that way, but otherwise, I mean, the agony of them opening you up and then, they'd have to slice you open quite a bit the
old way. It is truly remarkable. I mean, this is like, stuff you'd see on Star Trek or something.
Anyway,
good. It's good to hear you, and it's good to hear you're back to normal and getting there anyway and recovering, and you're in good hands at Cecilia's. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and she's out and doing things. I said, just don't worry about me. I'm just going to sit around, move from chair to chair, lie on the bed, read a book, go walk a bit. That's
it. Well,
and
don't.
She said, okay.
Make sure you take it easy. Make sure you take it easy.
Yes, I'm going to do that for sure.
Yeah.
Because I know at my age, no matter what, it's a case where, that's the priority, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Well, good talking to you. Listen, thanks for the call, and I'll pass on the word.
Okay, radio. Okay, bye.
Say goodbye to the Dixon James listeners.
Bye-bye, Dixon James listeners.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Bye-bye.
And hope you don't have an operation, but if you do,
yeah.
Have one like me, and it's great.
Yeah, excellent.
Okay.
Good to hear.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. All right. I'll probably leave that in. That was... not intended. It's just one of those things that I'm just relieved to hear. I love Brian, and he's a friend I just could not bear to lose at this point. And it's got to be scary, but this is starting off with prostate cancer, I guess, a couple of years ago. It goes back longer than that. I had Brian on, and I remember when he had an apartment downtown, right on the Danforth, with his youngest son, and I was interviewing about what kind of adult diapers he was wearing, because he was just at that stage, he'd just come out of surgery. He's the guy, my Nunavut friend, any listener to this probably knows who Brian is. He's been on the podcast before, and he is my number one drinking buddy. All right, well, that changes everything. I just thought I'd, my feet are cold. I'm going to start this baby up again, and I'm not going to stay very long. I just wanted to get out and let you know that... I wanted to give a special shout-out, speaking of friends, to Rob Lee for getting this podcast. If you heard number 660, it's because he got everything moved out of GoDaddy, I think, up to another service provider up here in Canada, and I had to do transfer and back-end stuff, as he referred to it as. And get everything fixed and ready. So thanks, Rob. Much, much, much appreciated. And this is Dixon James number 661. But I just wanted to say hello and let you know that I got the road trek out and feeling good about it. And this puts you in the frame of mind that if February comes and it's time for me to leave and it's a snowstorm, I'll be ready for it. All right. Yours truly,
Scarborough Dude, signing off.
'll be a short clip. I'm in St. Andrew's Cemetery. I just tweeted that. I've been listening to Sam Harris. In fact, I recorded about 12 minutes, and I'm going to, I don't want to put that old 12 minutes into my podcast, so I'm going to see if I can just take something out of it, but I find it so reassuring. This is waking up with Sam Harris. Listening to him talk about life, about politics, about religion, about philosophy, about science. Like, a very smart man and well-educated with just amazing guests on his podcast. It's one I really enjoy. It's just the very rare show that I might not be. If it gets too esoteric, well, I'm not maybe into that. And he'll nitpick, you know. But this one, the him calling out Trump was quite amazing. And it was the theme of the show was how people have turned against experts. You know, everybody has an opinion and they're right. And this day of Trump and this particular Republican Party, it's frightening. So you may hear a clip of that. I hope so. If I can just chop something out that I'll say is representative of what I want you to hear. And then I'll say, well, and now just go and listen to the Sam Harris or subscribe to his show. It's really worthwhile. Yeah, it's Sunday. I've had a very good day at church. In fact, it really resonated, this particular service. There was just so much that she said that rang true. I'm looking for the paper. I always carry with me the, you know, I make notes during the service, and then sometimes I carry. Damn it! There was one. The worst enemy. Oh, come on, where the hell is it? No, it's not there. And here it is. Give me a second. I talked. The wonderful thing is, you get to talk to Greta after, and I said, you know, I'm very happy to tell you that my sister's church, Bell's Corners United Church, in Nepean, they are studying her book, With or Without God. Anyway, here's a quote. The worst bullies you will ever encounter in your life are your own thoughts. And bam, does that ever ring true. Bryant McGill called Simple Reminders. That is something that just happens to me. And I realize that, you know, I really do bully myself a lot. And I'm
you know, we've talked about it last week. I also think after I've put out a podcast, oh my God, that was a piece of shit. Like, people are just not going to want to listen. And then I go back and listen and think that wasn't a bad podcast. I was honest. There was something in there that people might appreciate. I would hope anyway. So I don't feel so bad about it. And it was the same when I did the Dixon Jane zine. I'd put it out, get it in the mail. Felt satisfied that I had done something. Really satisfied, whether it's this podcast or mailing off the Dixon Jane zine. And then immediately after, think, oh, well, that was no good. And, you know, why? Why am I so judgmental on everything? Anyway, I went to a few places, and one of them was Chapters to Buy, the book I'm holding in my hand now, In Search of a Better World, A Human Rights Odyssey by Payam Akhavan. And this is from the CBC Massey Lectures, and it is the book our church has chosen for our book study starting in January. The last one we did was Sapiens, you know, about being human, which is a great book I talked about. So no doubt you're going to be hearing a little bit about this. It's the write-up was wonderful, and I'm going to read a bit of that to you, too, so that you might be encouraged to go out and buy a copy. A work of memoir, history, and a call to action. In Search of a Better World, the 2017 CBC Massey Lecture is a powerful and essential work on the major human rights struggles of our times. In February 2017, Amnesty International released their annual report for 2016 to 2017, concluding that the us versus them rhetoric increasingly employed by politicians is endangering human rights the world over. Renowned UN prosecutor and human rights scholar Payam Akhavan has encountered the grim realities of contemporary genocide throughout his life and career. He argues that deceptive utopias, political cynicism, and public apathy have given rise to major human rights abuses, from the religious persecution of the Iranian Baha'i that shaped his personal life, to the horrors of ethnic cleansing in Yugoslavia, the genocide in Rwanda, and the rise of contemporary phenomena such as the Islamic State. But he also reflects on the inspiring resilience of the human spirit and the reality of our inextricable interdependence to liberate us, whether from hateful ideologies that deny the humanity of others or an empty consumerist culture that worships greed and self-indulgence, a timely, essential, and passionate work of memoir and history. Is a tour de force by an internationally renowned human rights lawyer. That's from Goodreads. So I'm very glad. I feel it's progressive that our church has chosen this. You know, again, it speaks, you know, when I talk about this, again, people want to dumb down church. Oh, yeah, church. That's where you go stand up, sing hymns, and walk away feeling you're a better person. No, things happen in this church. There's real change. And what she spoke about today, the theme was on encounters. And she went to the roots of the word, which really means is related to an adversary. And that when you're meeting with somebody, they may reflect back on to you things you don't necessarily want to know. And she talked about it in her own life. And it made me think about what I was referred to in the last podcast, some of the conversation I might have with my wife, who calls things as they are and will point out my flaws. Too often, I maintain. But seriously, is honest and most of the time correct in what she sees and her outlook on life. And I mean, it's personal. There are biases. There are differences. But it's something to be valued. To be appreciated, to grow from. So what did I put here? Some notes, I'm sorry. There's an essence to us that never changes, and that's an interesting one. Like, what is, because I can't find it, what is the real me in there? What is there an essence? And there was some discussion about that. Is that true? We need adversaries to know who we are.
And what is it we want to know about ourselves? So anyway, I'm going to leave it there. I'm not going to go on too long about it. But I'm honestly, when I go to this, each time I think, well, I don't know, it's going to be the same. It never is. Like, Greta really works on it. She read, she always does like a poem she writes called Focused Moment. And it brought tears to her eyes, genuine tears, because it was about her mother. And recognizing the child within our parents, the essence of the parent. We never see to our own parents. We don't see them as children. And then as her mother grew older, she saw that. It was very, it was a beautiful little poem. And of course, it made me think of my own mother. What is it that we see? But out from behind that woman I knew emerged too slowly for me to notice the girl she had always been. She had been, had always been, whom I had never seen. And that's wonderful. And I told her the story of how, or I told her husband, Scott, who's also just an absolutely wonderful character, it was Greta I told, because I talked to both of them after church. You know, we have coffee and cookies and stuff. How I always called my mother by her first name, because she wasn't just my mother to me. She was a person, a real person. And I really did dearly love my mother. And again, I mentioned that last podcast. Dude, I don't want to repeat myself. Anyway, I just wanted to give a short, and it seems it's not so short. It's almost 10 minutes. Update. I'm very happy. I can't wait to start reading this book. I am still reading Desolation Angels, the Kerouac book, and I am enjoying it. He's in Mexico now, and, you know, he's living in a house where William Burroughs is living. Burroughs is in his junkie phase and can't go back to the States at this point. Allen Ginsberg has just come to visit him, and I'm getting a sense. This isn't a polished book like On the Road or even The Dharma Bums. This is pretty raw, but I'm getting a real sense of who the real Jack Kerouac was when I'm reading this, a better understanding. And that is something I've been trying to do for a long time. So it's slow going, but I'm enjoying it. But this book, I'm very excited about it. And I'm once again thrilled that West Hill United, the church that is under fire from the United Church for some small-minded people and have treated us terribly as if we were, well, my God, they're heretics, those people. It's very sad. Scott, Greta's husband, was saying she just doesn't use the word God because nobody can pin it down, and it gets attached to too many other things. And if you use the word God, then somebody says, oh, yeah, I know the God I mean, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Islamic God, or this God, that God, and everybody has their own definition. And therefore, it's a very, almost a dangerous word to use, because people sort of draw a line around it. Yeah, I know what you mean by God. This is God. And therefore, it's better not to use it at all. Okay, I guess I'll leave it there. I'm encouraged by the fact that I think the Dixon James podcast is a damn good podcast. I needed to get there. I'm sorry, I should have heard it from you rather than me telling myself. But I need that reassurance to keep on going. And I guess I'll leave it on that lousy note. Yeah, and you'll be hearing more about everything else that's going on in my life. Tomorrow's Monday. Tomorrow I got a return exam. I got to meet with students. I got to plan a lesson and give them something to help them get up to the next level. I mean, I've got to, and the focus is on writing. How do you write a good paragraph? How do you basically? It's the problem is, how do you focus? How do you think clearly? How do you express yourself clearly? And yes, language is a huge part of it. But beyond that is, well, think first about your ideas. And I've got to figure, okay, how am I going to deliver a lesson that's going to actually help them, provoke them into thinking and focusing their thinking and expressing a point of view with reasons behind it. That's the job ahead. It's not an easy one. All right, boys, girls, Scarborough Dude. Going to go back to listening to Waking Up. And talk to you again soon. Bye for now.
Guys, this is great. Not only will I be able to put food on the table and pay all my bills, I'll also be able to finance my Christmas album.
Sessions presents... A Peter Griffin Christmas, featuring such standards as
Everybody look at the snow in the yard.
And who could forget?
I brought these gifts for you, they're up in my bum.
And everyone's favorite.
La-la-la-la, look at the bells, look at the bells. Holy crap, here comes Jesus, and he doesn't look too happy. Merry Christmas, everyone.
For me to you, I wish you a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, time off with your family, whatever it is that you celebrate. For me to you, from the bottom of my heart, I hope that you have some joy and some happiness in your life, that you're able to shelter yourself from the craziness that is the world around us these days, and just have some make some happy memories this in the next week or so. Thanks for being out there and listening. It means a lot to me to know that there's some people in this world that feel the way, that might feel the way that I do about some things, that it also helps me to know that there's people out there that absolutely disagree with everything I say. It keeps me in check, you know. And it's nice to know that there's people out there that would just, like, you know, take some time out of their day to hear what I have to say. Ridiculous as what you just listened to is or not. Thank you. And I love you. Take care.
Well, thank you, Doug. That I love you part at the end, it's something I just can't bring myself to say. It's funny. And every time you say it, it sort of strikes me. And I remember that my first reaction was almost like hostile. Whoa, you can't say that. You know who's listening. How could you love those people? But, I mean, it's crazy because who else listens to our podcast other than people who care? People who are full of hatred and venom and nasty people who we wouldn't love wouldn't likely be listening, right? We don't have enemies tuning in. Oh, my God, Doug has put another one out. Got to listen and get angry. Anyway, thanks, Doug. Good to have you back. And, I'm sitting here at Bluffers Park. Got my lovely little JBL speaker all wired up. Not even wired up. That's the beauty. No wires. No. Connected. You know, the Bluetooth. Sorry, maybe what Doug was doing is a little contagious. I'm a little too shy to get goofy. When I'm alone, when I'm cooking in the kitchen, I make a lot of goofy noises. I do like nitwit Brits, you know, like you'd hear on Monty Python. I just do a lot of crazy voices, but I seldom ever do them on this podcast. So, which reminds me, I haven't heard from Prick for so long. I almost missed the guy. But anyway, it's Tuesday, 19th of December, and I had a class yesterday, and I decided, and I'm glad I did something, I decided I'm going to talk to every student about their grades and go over their paper and show them where they went wrong and what they're going to need to do if they want to pass this course, get the credit. But I couldn't do it in front of other students. It's, you know, far too embarrassing. So I took another room, and they'd have to walk down the hall, and it was just killing time. And finally, we decided that one of the students suggested, well, look, just put two chairs in the hallway. So I did that, and I'm really glad I got to speak to every student. One student who could have passed this course missed two classes with two tests worth 35%, and so I actually scolded him, you know, like, hey, send a note, email your teacher, you know, and then say, you know, I missed it, sorry, this, that, whatever. I'm very strict about it. You know, we need a doctor's note. You just can't sort of say, oh, I wasn't there, sorry. Give me another chance. But I gave him another chance. And then realized, oh my God, there's all kinds of other stuff he hasn't done yet. So, I don't know. I scolded him again, but I took the time to email and let him know exactly what he has to do if he still wants to have a fighting chance of passing and not wasting his money and time. Because I do care about these people. They are nice students. I've enjoyed this round of teaching. And again, it's a good note to go out on. So I got one more class Wednesday and then just three in January, and that's the end of it. And I spoke to the chairperson, and I said, I don't want to sound like I'm brown-nosing, but I'm really impressed with how well you've done in your job. And I really meant it, because when he first came in, he was at a brought from out of province, and he wasn't too comfortable, and it was a tense time to come in. He was replacing somebody who people didn't have great feelings about towards the end. And he's grown into it. He's done actually a very decent job. And he's certainly been good to me in terms of giving me the classes and schedules I wanted. So I thanked him for that. Let him know I was feeling on top of things. I'm very glad. And he said, so this winter term? I said, oh, no. I got a road trip sitting in the driveway saying, let's go to California. I don't know if I will, but I noticed last night I was Googling the Flying J gas stations where you can park. And they're pretty cool. They have showers and everything for the truck drivers. You know, you can pay a fee and get in there. They're very, very neat. And as well as, of course, the walnuts. And I keep pulling out the map and looking and realized, oh, gee, you know, first day drive, pretty easy to get to Parma, Ohio. There's another threat. No, Jason, other Jason said, sure. So, hopefully he won't live to regret those words. But we'll see. It's too early to get ahead of that now. More importantly, I'm going to Ottawa tomorrow. Thursday. See my sister, my brother, my nephews, my nieces, in-laws, husbands and wives. And I'm kind of glad about it. And it all stems from a men's group meeting we had at the church last night when we sat around and very casual. There was only four of us, again. And we just sort of talked about Christmas traditions. And I listened to the other people, and I was really envious of all the family-type things they're doing. And it sounded, I'm picturing, you know, Christmas trees and lights and decorations and beginning to feel sorry for not just myself, but my family, my wife, my son. We're not doing much as just the three of us, and reflecting more on how our family really is limited. Like, I mean, bam, half the family, my wife's side, is in Japan, has never been here. So the kids are really cut off from that. Number one son's out in Vancouver, won't see him. And I'm seeing my brother and sister less and less frequently, I guess. I've got a nephew close by who's disowned me. That's kind of personal and shouldn't talk about it, but it's sad, it's unfortunate and unnecessary, and I'm angry about it, but it just can't be fixed at this point. I'm listening to them and thinking, shit, you know, that's, I was sort of saying, they asked me, and I was saying, oh, I'm bah humbug kind of guy, I don't feel anything till Christmas Eve, and then it's too late, and so on, and just couldn't get into it. And the more I listened to them, kind of the sadder I felt about it. And next thing you know, this morning, first thing, I'm texting my sister and saying, hey, are you going to be home Thursday? I think I might drive down. And I purposefully sent a note, an email, to the three other people who are at the meeting with me, and I thanked them. I said, you know, I left feeling kind of a little bit sad, but it prompted me to actually do something about it. And right away, one of them wrote back and was very, you know, you could tell it was a very positive, gee, great to hear that. I'm so happy about that, Ken. And the other one said, Ken, I couldn't even email you. I have to phone you. And he phoned me and thanked me. And it was just grateful and pleased that what I'm doing, like, these are people who care. And the reason I'm going on about this is that, like the church service, often I'll go and I'm like, okay, Sunday morning I'll go. I like getting up. I like the routine. It's not too early. 10:30, got to be there. But I'm never expecting a whole lot, and I always get far more than I anticipated. Like, I always walk out leaving, wow, am I ever glad I came? And last session in particular, I mean, there are three things that really struck home and made me think and reflect and be grateful for. And then you've got this follow-up time to actually talk with Greta and talk with Scott, her husband, and other people and have fun, and some you just joke with and some it's a serious talk.
And it's the same thing with the men's group. I don't go with any anticipation of, oh, well, this is going to be good, you know. You just go. And then you find, well, if you're just sitting around being honest with people, and being fairly open and spontaneous, you never know what's going to happen. So I'm grateful for all of that. I've got on my lap here, In Search of a Better World, A Human Rights Odyssey. I'm so happy our church chose this book. I guess this will be my Christmas book. I always buy myself a book for Christmas, but this one I couldn't wait. I went and got it and I'm reading it. He is of the Baha'i faith and talks about the persecution they've endured under the Khomeini regime and the others in Iran, and how cruel it is. And he hasn't even started on his real life's journey. But an excellent story. And again, it's just so encouraging when you find out about intelligent, well-educated, caring people out there in this world against the other nonsense we put up with generally in the field of politics and business. I recorded a long clip from, again, another Sam Harris podcast, and I thought, okay, I got to edit this down, and now I don't even know if I want to bother or should. I don't know what it means. There's a few gems I thought were appropriate, but you've probably had enough or heard enough, so we'll see on that one. Anyway, I just wanted to greet you. I just wanted to let you know that I'm continuing to plod along on this journey. It's a journey I'm on, and I am on still, and will continue to be on for some time, but I am plodding. I'm very slow. Speaking of which, yesterday I went arse over tea kettle, as the expression goes. Wow! Stepped out onto an icy sidewalk at the college and just lost control. Like, just, whoa! Slow motion, like up in the air, you know, like your feet just out from under you, and then you know your brain is processing this thing. Holy fuck, man, you're gonna land on that, and that's gonna hurt. And it did, just like completely no control, like as if it's slowed down and you know what's going on. And it's scary because you don't know how hard you're gonna land or what you're gonna exactly land on. There's not a whole lot you can do. It just happened so quickly. But I'm okay. I had a pretty aching joint. Couldn't sort of lift my leg to get out of, in and out of the car yesterday after it happened. But a little better today. I'm grateful that it wasn't anything worse. That's going to happen this time of year. So I guess I think I'm better spending time. Oh, yeah. I did post a picture. I've got my little box of 10 Timbits for a dollar, which I've been advertising on TV. Advertising works, you know, they just keep seeing this every night. 10 Timbits for a dollar, ooh, that's a deal, with the purchase of a coffee. Then when I drove in, I saw another, ooh, you can get three little cherry baked goods, you know, for 50 cents. So I said, oh, I'll get that too. He said, well, you need another coffee. You've already used your one coffee for the Timbits, you need another coffee. And that'll be maybe tomorrow. Okay, that's clearly not important. I guess I have more serious things in the back of my mind, like how are we going to dismantle this capitalist system? I just heard, you hear about these big companies buying up smaller ones. Like Hershey bought up some other company, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And it's sort of like dinosaurs just eating away at the smaller prey and becomes these huge things with somebody. And you know, the person at the top has got to be a bit of a nasty human being. We're not talking about kind, gentle humanists. To rise up to the top of that chain, it takes certain personality and types. And it just seems so wrong. And then another voice says, hey, man, be a realist. There's 8 billion on the planet. Who's feeding you? Who's making those fucking Timbits? Who's getting that coffee processed? It's these big things that feed you. The fact that they can crank out as many fucking Big Macs as anybody could ever want is all because of this huge machine that's been put into place. And that's, you know, part of this system.
And, you know, and you sort of have to surrender a little bit, like a dog that's been smacked on the nose. Okay, okay, okay. Yeah, I want my comforts. Yeah, I want to be able to go to the grocery store and pick up all what I need. And I like the way it works. I like the fact that I'm living here and everything is working. So there's this conflict, you know, between those things. You know, I'm not a back to the lander. I'm not saying, oh, boy. I mean, I would just simply starve to death and, you know, have my family hate me for it because I was just so useless, you know. Okay, well, let's not go there too much deeper. Scarborough Dude, signing off. And I'll be back at you with a song, or who knows when this podcast will come out. And none of it really matters all that much. Bye for now.
Well, Rudolph, we finally figured out what makes your nose red.
Is it pixie dust or leprechaun tails?
No, it's a tumor.
You mean like a magical Christmas tumor?
No, a malignant tumor, the base of which is lodged deep within your brain.
Oh. Like a happy special...
You're going to die.
Okay. I am heading to Ottawa tomorrow to see my sister. Maybe I already said that. And I kind of want to finish this podcast off before I go, because when I get there, there'll be a whole new series of thoughts and feelings and maybe things I want to share with you. So I'm going to close today. It is Wednesday. I had my last class before the holidays. And it went well. I did the same thing, one-on-one interviews with each of the students out in the hallway in a couple of chairs, and taught them, told them what they need to do to pass. And it was intimate. It was nice. It was good. I do really like that part of teaching. And I went through a whole lot of these pictures before class and encouraged them to ask questions. And one of them asked about the education system, how it was different from his back in India. And I explained. I gave two examples. And one of them was Steve Jobs, who was, you know, a bit of a wild guy before he started Apple. But by going his own way, and the American education system, North American, Western culture education system, about expressing yourself, being, allows for creativity. And I sort of argued that somebody like Stephen Jobs might not have succeeded in another country. I didn't specify which countries, but that it was the Western part of it is, of course, the spirit of capitalism. But it was more than that. It was the drive to succeed. There were many factors. I guess I'm not doing a very good job here. I did a better job in class, right, with students. But the other example I gave was closer to home, and it was my son being in elementary school and drawing a picture the way kids do of a sky and a house and a bird and ground and so on. But he drew paint-colored a yellow sky. And I said a lot of other cultures, they would have told him, no, that's wrong, the sky is blue. But he made it yellow, and I still have that picture, and I went on about how he's still an artist today. He's quite amazing. He's just posted a few pictures on his Facebook account, which you won't find. And they're amazing, these handheld sketches and that, you know, people are commissioning him now to do, you know, of their pets in particular, dogs and cats. Anyway, my point, I guess, was the teacher here allowed him the yellow sky. That's fine. That's nice, you know, and we delight in it. But a more traditional educational system would not have allowed that. And what was beautiful, the pictures I had already chosen were relating to education. And one of them shows a line of four kids, and they've all got thought bubbles, round thought bubbles over their head. Except for the first one, which is square. And then the second one, you see there's a teacher standing with a pair of scissors. And she's cutting the round thought bubbles to make them all square. And you can see the next student and the next student. The kids are just drooling idiots that are looking ahead. But they've now, the first one and soon the second one will have perfectly shaped square thought bubbles. And they all got that, and they all loved it, and it fit perfectly with what I was just saying, you know, this need for conformity and following the right thing. Another one had a teacher sitting at his desk, and there were kids with their heads tilted forward and their brains, their heads, top of their heads open, and the teacher was ripping, these are cartoon characters, ripping pages out of a book, crumpling it up, and throwing it into the kids' heads. And so it all came together. I mean, it was a really good talk. I know those students will walk away having enjoyed my class, having maybe learned something, thought about something, and having had personal, you know, face-to-face contact with me. So I'm proud about that. Gosh, was that where I was going? No, I was going to read from you In Search of a Better World, the book that we're doing for the church. I just volunteered to help. There's going to be one person facilitating this, and I put my name for it, even though I don't know how long I'm going to be around this winter. I said, well, I helped her last year. I can help again, and I can put up my blog with all the questions and so on. I'm going to read just from the very, very beginning. I'm into it already. I'm already into it by, you know, 85 pages, and it's so good. The tragedy, and I haven't even begun, you know, some of them. He's just talking about the personal persecution of the Baha'i faith in Iran. And how they hung a childhood friend, a female, who had written a high school paper about freedom of expression. And for that, you know, the police came in, the Khomeini's men came in, took her away, took her father away, hung her father, beat her every day, beat her on the soles of the feet the way they did to try and get her to recant and become, you know, join the Islamic faith and give up the heresy of her faith. And she refused and bravely went to her death. And I think 10 women were brought out that day, and she was the last one to be hung as they made her watch all the others. I mean, this is real. And clearly, this impacted the writer's life so much. I mean, you hear, like, one story of one person. It's easy to read this and try to say, oh, my God, all these people slaughtered by ISIS, and it's just a number, and it's a flash-by on the CNN news or whatever. You don't feel it. When this person knew, I mean, he knew from that point on his life would never be the same when he knew the story. He'd already been taught the suffering of his people, but when it came driven home by somebody he had known very well, and her father who was friends with his family, it breaks your heart, and it just stops you in your tracks. I'm going to read just a little bit from the introduction long before that passage happened, if you don't mind. Excuse me, no cough button. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights was adopted on December 10th, 1948. Same age as me. The UN thereby proclaimed, without empirical verification, that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. It professed as a self-evident truth that they are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in the spirit of brotherhood. In light of the appalling cruelty of our collective past, this would seem more a naive aspiration than a logical proposition. The 18th century English historian Edward Gibbon famously wrote, "History is indeed a little more than the register of crimes, follies, and misfortunes of mankind." Yet human rights remain an ideal at the core of our self-conception. Today we demand justice for the oppressed. We no longer accept atrocities as the inescapable fate of the defenseless. We desire and expect a better future. But when confronted with the enormity of injustice and what it demands of us, we retreat into the familiar ritual of intellectualization and moral posturing, recycling lofty liberal ideas from a safe distance. We avoid the intimate knowledge of suffering, without which we will never understand the imperative of human rights. It goes on. The problem of the world is not a shortage of brilliant theories or feel-good slogans. The problem is that we confuse proliferation of progressive terminology with profound empathy and purposeful engagement. Think of Facebook and all the other things you click like and add your name to. I'm guilty. We say the right things, but we fail to act on them because we want to feel virtuous without paying a price.
This book is about worthy human rights causes, from the local to the global, of which we speak so often. Refugees, multiculturalism, bringing war criminals to justice before the Hague Tribunal, the responsibility to protect victims of genocide, global governance, and world peace through a strong UN, grassroots activism, and speaking truth to power. This book is about all those things, but above all, it is about why we cannot remain comfortably detached from the painful realities and urgent challenges that these ideas convey. There can be no meaningful change if we choose to look down at the arena of anguish from 30,000 feet. That's quite powerful, and it made me think, and I'm embarrassed to say this, it made me think, what am I doing to help? You know, I get something in the mail from email from Amnesty International. I'll put my name, yes, you know, send a letter. Will I even bother to add a personal note? Seldom. Just add my name to the list. The people on allout.org, when somebody is thrown in jail in some African country because he was arrested for being a homosexual, and you add your name and send a letter, and the petition, sign the petition. Are you really doing anything? It's not enough, but going back to this same class today, I do talk about how Canada has changed. I did talk today specifically again about how 50 years ago when I was in school, if you're a homosexual, you had to hide the fact. And it went on to show that people are of a continuum. There is no male-female firm dividing line, other than if you want maybe sexual organs, which is up for grabs, pardon me. And that some people are more masculine, some are more feminine. There's this continuum, and we are all different and all unique. And that tied into what I was saying about the yellow sky and Steve Jobs. The encouragement to be who you are, because we are all uniquely special. And boy, they were looking, they were listening. It was only a handful of students today because it's last class before the holiday and there's no test, so a lot of them just buggered off and didn't come to class. 3:30 in the, or 8:30 in the morning. But those that did were into it. But I always put that message out because I know from so many countries, they have not reached that point yet about gay rights and equality and rainbow coalitions and all the kind of things that we now accept as the norm. So I will miss that. Again, I mean, that's not enough, but it's, I've told you about my fear of dentists. They're not a fear of dentists, but the dark place I get into. And it is always, 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 as I sit in the chair with my mouth open and I hear these high-speed tools, I'm suddenly aware, and I keep saying it's South American prison. It could be anywhere, a prison where you're at the hands, as this little girl was, of torturers, of cruel people. And when I have a shower and I step in and I adjust it just right and put my hand under the tap before I pull the lever to make the shower water come over me, it's at the perfect temperature, not too hot, not too cold. And always at that point, the thought comes of Nazi Germany, of, you know, people. Well, I'm not thinking of the gas showers. I'm just thinking of people in, submerged into ice-cold water to see how soon they die when they're practicing on human subjects and the cruelties and the horror that is being practiced daily all around us. And the fact that it's in me like a virus, like a sickness, like a disease. It's not something I think about and go around and play with and I'm fascinated by. And I avoid it as much as I possibly can. But somewhere this little seed is germinated. It's poking through the earth. Anything to do with animal cruelty just makes me feel so bad, and I try banish those thoughts. So I feel compassion to the people who have witnessed torture, have had members suffer, who for a living counsel people who are victims or recovering from barbaric cruelties, and to know that it's going on in the name of fucking religions, God damn it! Holy Christ! and other reasons. I mean, I'm not talking about the sick, crazy people, because that's part of the human diversity. That's just part of the game, that there's going to be a wacko out there who wants to butcher and eat people, you know. But I'm talking about systematic, organizational, for political, for religious reasons. People who will practice cruelty on others who are different. It's horrific. And the feeling you end up with is, I'm not doing enough. I know it exists. I'm comfortable. Here I am, sitting comfortably in my car, looking out at Lake Ontario, talking to people with a book and a full stomach and the idea of going back and a car loaded with wine to bring down to Ottawa as gifts and presents and this joy of family and warmth and comfort and good food around Christmas time. In such sharp contrast to those who are suffering. And again, I'm not just talking starvation. It's just the deliberate. And it's the feeling of, shouldn't I be doing more? And it's almost as if when you come to that point, it's almost as if the rest of your life is just meaningless, or I don't know. Like, how else do you get meaning of life? Is it just fun and kicks? Oh, I want that. I want to be sitting in a bar with Brian drinking beer, having fun, laughing, looking forward to the next pint after this one. But is there not more that we should be doing? That's a lousy thought to end on. It's a lousy thought to dump on you, but maybe I'd appreciate your reflections, your thoughts, your feedback. Thank you, Malayan, for always posting a comment on almost every show, one thing or another. I do argue sometimes that it is a responsibility of us who are living comfortable lives without suffering to at the very least, make the most of it and be grateful and thankful and celebrate it. You know, to have everything and still be miserable seems almost offensive. Anyway, I hope this doesn't sound in any way at all insincere or phony, because it's not meant to be. It is just, I know on some other level, wow, this church that I joined is taking me to good places, having read that other book about being human and sitting in and you know, the future of mankind, and here going a next step level. I mean, it's so good that this book was chosen, that we will read this and discuss this and maybe talk about it as a group of people who attend a church. What more can we do? This kind of discussion that I'm having with you now is what will arise on the Friday evenings when we get together. And if you're out there and you live near Toronto, anywhere near Scarborough, commuting distance, and you want to attend these meetings, get in touch with me. Scarborough Dude it's DixonJanes@gmail.com. All right, I'm going to stop there. This is probably enough. I'm going to go home. Already I'm thinking about that first beer I'll have. No. My wife has spiced up, marinated some beautiful thick ribs, which my number two son will barbecue tonight, and I've got a bottle of wine open. And it's a funny thing about life. I mean, we talk about Christmas and presents. I'm not expecting any presents. I did buy. Did I? I don't even know if I told you. No, I don't think I did. I yesterday, probably not. I went to the Great Escape Bookshop before it closes for their taking stock and so on. And I picked up for $10 that big thick book about Steve Jobs, and that's going to be my Christmas present to me from Santa. Because I want to enjoy it. And when I was flipping through, I mean, you got to remember, I've been an Apple guy since the Apple IIe. That's the first one I got my hands on in Japan before the Mac came out.
And then, bam, our company went out and bought Max, and holy moly, look at the shit this thing can do. You know, so we went from dot matrix to laser printers. We went that journey, and I was with that journey every step of the way with the software, with the operating system upgrades. I remember when OS 7.5 was huge. There was 7, then 7.1, but then, boom, this leap to 7.5. I remember HyperCard. I remember all that shit and enjoyed every bit of it. I remember getting both Mac User and Macworld magazines and getting so excited and having a company account where I could order stuff like flying toasters that Jason still has, you know, convincing my company, no, I need this. We need this thing just so I can watch. Oh, man, I love that. And so many little bits of obscure software, Agent DA and Full Impact, a spreadsheet, which I wrote a whole book on because I could put characters in the placeholders where the numbers would go. And I actually published a book that the school used for several years on a spreadsheet program. That's how I did it. Bizarre, because I didn't know anything about desktop publishing. But I got this program, but hey, this will work. And it did. It did. I actually did publish a book on basic English teaching for this school, and they used it for a very long time. All right. That's the end. I'm feeling happier now. Thank you. So, I bought that. And then there was another Aldous Huxley book I wanted, and I picked it up, and it was, oh, my God, it was thick, and it was fine print. I can't read this anymore. So instead, picked up the copy of the book beside it, and, of course, it's Huxley's famous The Doors of Perception and Heaven and Hell. And I just thought, no, I just need to have that book. There were a lot of Kerouacs, all the ones I had, but different versions. A very neat version of The Subterraneans, and I've already got 3 copies of that. And I said, no, 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 you don't need that. So I didn't buy it, did not allow myself to buy it. That was good. All right, this is yours truly, the host of the Dixon Change Podcast, your friend, if you want. If you want, if you're not a complete dork, if you're not a miserable old bitch, if you're actually a decent human being trying to be a better human being, not only do you have to be an okay human being, but you have to actually actively be trying to be a better human being, then you can be my friend. There you go. And you know what the cost? You know what that'll cost you? Sweet, well, I was going to say sweet fuck all. No. And hey, if you want to get me a beer anytime, I won't say no. But what I'm saying is up front, you don't need to get that beer for me. There is no upfront cost. But as we go down this road together, and you think, my God, you know, I'm really glad I met Ken. He is actually a really nice guy. And he's getting on, you know. If this guy dies someday and I didn't buy him a beer, I'm going to feel really shitty about it. So I think next time I see Ken, I'm going to say, Ken, let me get you a beer. What would you like? And I'm not talking a Molson Canadian or some Coors fucking light shit. I'm talking about a nice pint, a good beer, the kind they serve up in the only cafe or wherever you happen to be. All right? That's my final Merry Christmas message to you. Yeah. Think of the others. And, if this is the podcast that goes out before Christmas, well, listen, I hope you have a good time. I hope you're happy. I hope you celebrate. I hope you got some warmth and coziness around you. I hope you got family and loved ones close by that you can hug and be grateful to be a part of. And I hope everything goes your way. And if it doesn't, do whatever is necessary to make things go better. Signing out. Ho, 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 ho! Once you hear words of
Christmas is here.